Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Eric, thanks for joining us on the podcast, man. I'm excited to jump in. You are intense. I love the intensity. Love your book. We'll make sure all of our listeners hear that. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So your audience mainly is the financial space. A lot of financial advisors, and our listeners range from kind of independent, you know, the folks that are kind of doing a lot of it on their own, to kind of big teams, part of big organizations. But what I love about your message is it doesn't matter what size of organization you're with. Even if you are an organization of one, everything you say still matters and can be implemented. So before we jump in, I think everybody needs to know, you know, one, read his book. It's awesome, intense, hard to put down. But if you can just kind of give us a background and then kind of how you ended up moving into the consulting and coaching space you're in.
Yeah, thanks. You know, and for your audience too, Sten, your audience is kind of near and dear to my heart, because when I'll give my background story, but when I transitioned from the Marines, I went to business school, and after business school, I actually worked in financial services for a year and a half. And then I founded the program. So, but anyway, I'm Eric Kapitulik. I'm a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. I played college lacrosse there. Upon graduating, I served 8 years as a United States Marine Corps officer, as an infantry officer, and then in Marine Corps Special Operations with 5th Platoon, 1st Force Reconnaissance Company. While serving with them, my Marines and I, my Special Operations Marines and I, we were involved in a helicopter crash off the coast of Southern California while training for our upcoming deployment. During that tragedy, 6 of my 10 Force Reconnaissance Marines lost their life. In an effort to raise money for a college scholarship fund that I set up shortly thereafter, I began to compete in the world's longest endurance events and climb the world's tallest mountains. After 8 years on active duty, left active duty, went to business school, as I just got done saying, graduated from the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business, worked in the financial services industry for 18 months, and then I founded the program. And the program has one mission: develop great teammates and leaders to create world-class teams. That's what we do.
Man, I love that. When you, with the transition, and since you've been in the business, which I appreciate, I think unless you have, it's hard to understand kind of the size of it, the complexity of it. A financial advisor doesn't mean one thing. You know, I think there's 100 versions of financial advisors and what they sell, what their process is. I know part of my story is looking back is that when I started, there was no path. There was a lot of average. The industry said, just do average stuff really hard and really long, and eventually you'll be successful.
Yeah.
And I know that didn't inspire me. You know, I didn't have an alternative, so I just kept doing it and kind of had to refine it on my own. Mm-hmm. But you're 18 months. There must have been something there in there that triggered, like, hey, there's a big need, not only in this business, but other companies. What did you experience? And then kind of what did that trigger in you in that 18-month period?
Yeah, thanks. It's a great question. When I got out of business school, I went to go work for Goldman Sachs, right? So for an established firm, with an established team, which I think on many levels much easier than being a sole proprietor, right? Just getting out there and trying to make it happen, right? I mean, at Goldman, they talk about it being an entrepreneurial spirit, and it is in some respects. I think in the financial advisor thing, I mean, you got to figure it out, and that's very entrepreneurial for sure. But by the same token, it's different though when you're going with an established company. Right. With that said, there were some things that I learned while doing financial services that remain universal truths with me to this day.
Nice.
A couple of those things is the number one is that be long-term greedy. Don't make short-term monetary gain decisions at the expense of long-term wealth creation for your clients and for yourself, and not just financially. In life, be long-term greedy. That has never left me. I learned that in financial services, and I put it to work today. Number two, huge point that is true regardless of the industry is, and it's just the statistic, right? The average person does not engage with you. The average prospect does not engage with you until 8 points of contact. The average salesperson stops contacting them after 3. So you just don't even get enough at bats, right? Yeah. And boy, that has changed my life right there.
No, I love
so, you know, be disciplined. And that to answer the final part of that question, and that's held true. That held true in financial services. It's held true with working with the program and founding the program.
So when you founded the program, was the program floating in your head for years, and then it just got clear, and then there was a point where you said, "Hey, this is a business." What was kind of the triggering event?
Yeah, thanks, Sten. I say this often. Let me tell you in your audience what I think is the single greatest thing about being a graduate of the Naval Academy. When I speak, I talk about this. Single greatest thing about being a graduate of Annapolis. Once people find that out about you, you graduated from Annapolis. Never again in the rest of your life does anybody ever ask you, "So, what was your GPA?"
That's right.
That's what I think is the single greatest thing about being a graduate of the Naval Academy, Sten. So to think like, man, I get told all the time, "Oh my God, Cap, great idea. That's genius, buddy." Like everything else. And I always tell them without hesitation, it is a great idea, isn't it? The program, it's not my idea, but it's a great idea. So no, Sten, when I was after my time at Goldman, it was just that, I guess, really coming from the Marine Corps, where the physicality of the Marine Corps really appealed to me, and it still does appeal to me. And it would probably be the number one reason why I left financial services on some level, is that I didn't want to be. Not that you have to be, but I was more in an office type setting, and I didn't want that, right? I wanted to be able to travel. I wanted to, and those things. So that's what caused me and was a reason for me to think, hey, I'm going to start my own business. And then the way the program started was I decided I was going to start my business. And my idea was to do hourly strength and conditioning coaches for prep schools. Oh. And it did work. It did. Like, I was making revenue doing that. But at the same time, the new Harvard men's lacrosse coach, John Tillman, who's now one of the most famous head lacrosse coaches, he's the head coach at Maryland. He had just become the head coach at Harvard. He called me. He had been an assistant coach at Navy when I was back working in the admissions department and teaching leadership at Navy.
Okay.
He was an assistant coach on that Navy team. I had just gone to Navy. Some guys had gotten in trouble, and the head coach called me and said, "Hey, Cap, can you come down here and just wear these guys out for a couple days?" And that's what I did. Well, now fast forward years later, he's the head coach at Harvard. He calls me and says, "Cap, look, can you come down here and just work on these guys' toughness, their resiliency?" So I did. When working with them, at times I would call their team captains out to the front to lead some events and exercises with me. I'm out there working out with the team.
Nice.
And these young men, very smart, good guys, you know, good upstanding people, great athletes, they really struggled communicating. And that kind of led me to think, you know, the strength and conditioning stuff, these guys kind of have. But the impact that the some of the leadership lessons that I just kind of took for granted from the Naval Academy and then certainly from the Marine Corps, it's I shouldn't take it for granted. Like, and there's a need here. Well, in that first year in business, I ended up working, and I use that pronoun very rarely, I, but I worked with three college men's lacrosse teams. Nice. Now, in our 16th year in business, I would be out of business, number one. Yeah. We work with more than 160 teams.
Wow, that's great. So with that, you mentioned there were some things that you had experienced that you took for granted. And I know me as a leader, you know, my leadership style, just because this is how I was when I was young, was just put somebody in an opportunity and just turn them loose and say, hey, I'm here if you need help.
Mm.
That did not work out for me. I think there's a line between like delegation and abdication. And it took me messing up or seeing that not work to realize like, oh, that might have worked for me based on kind of who I was and the resiliency I gained from my own personal journey and story. Mm-hmm. But what my hope is what I want to give our listeners today is like that there's probably a formula. Like no matter who you are as a leader, these things are true. And so if we could try to unpack some of those things, I know I have some summary from notes I was as reading your book. And one of those is hard versus challenging. If we can try to give our listeners, like, no matter who you are, no matter what your story is, no matter what your head trash is going to say, here's some practical truths that as all leaders we need to know, I think that'd be a big win.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, right, about, hey, just get out there and do it, right? Like, just because it worked for you doesn't mean it works for everybody else. I mean, the whole year, you know, people talk about, yeah, you know how I taught my kid to swim or how I learned to swim? Yeah, I just got thrown in the deep end. Yeah, do you know how a lot of people die, drown? Yeah, by getting thrown in the deep end, right? So like, some development is key. Hard versus challenging. When I was in the Marines, a great honor, probably the greatest honor I had in the Marines is also the only thing I've ever done in my life that's hard. When serving at the Naval Academy, my commanding officer came to me and said, hey, Cap, will you volunteer for this duty? And because what he was going to ask me to do, you can't be ordered to do it. You have to volunteer for it. Well, after accepting it, that day I drove home from the Naval Academy immediately, put on my dress blue uniform, drove out to the eastern shore of Maryland, drove up this family's driveway, parked my car, got out, walked up their walkway, stood in front of their door and rang the doorbell. And I had to wait for them to answer the door so that when they did so, I could tell that mom, Leah Hall, I could tell Leah that her son had just been shot and killed in Iraq. I had to ring the doorbell and then wait, knowing that when that mom answered the door, I was going to ruin her life, ruin it. And I couldn't, oh, hey, I'm injured today, coach. Can't go in. I don't feel great. I couldn't blame the bad guys over in Iraq for killing or ruining that woman's life. Nope, I was going to stand there, ring that doorbell, and I was going to ruin her life by being that messenger. That is the only thing in my life that I've ever done that's hard. The only thing. Everything else that we do on a day-to-day basis is just challenging. And warriors, and warrior, that term has nothing to do with the military. Warrior. We love a challenge. We love a challenge. Now, by human nature, we just want to get through the hard things in life. But as warriors, if you are one, man, we want to be challenged. We love challenges. And then we go attack those challenges. Our thoughts then become our words, and our words manifest themselves in our actions. If you've got a sick loved one, dear family member, friend, child, you know, son, daughter, you want to call those things hard? No argument. No argument. 100%. Everything else that we do in life is just a challenge. Start thinking about them as such, because that's the way you'll talk about them. And then those are the things that you'll go and attack. Important as to be the best teammate and leader you can be, regardless of the team that you're on. Because, man, we have all of us have lots of challenges every day.
Yeah. Man, I felt that as you told that story. I couldn't imagine. How many times did you do that?
I was, when in the helicopter crash that my Marines and I were involved in, there were other, they're called casualty officers, casualty assistant officers. There were other casualty assistant officers that notified the wives or parents of the Marines that I was privileged to serve with, because I was with them out off the coast.
Yeah.
To be the person that actually walks up to the door and rung the doorbell, that was my one and only experience, opportunity, privilege. And I call it a privilege because it's a privilege to honor that Marine, and in this case, his parents, by being that person.
Yeah. Wow.
That's in accepting that role.
Oh yeah. Within the, that resonates with me. I think through my story, there was a season of life of you just do whatever you can to be comfortable. I think in some people's stories, they've been so uncomfortable, whether that's parents divorced, there's so many stories I hear from people that are just so much challenge and definitely hard things happening in there that your resilience is built even without your choosing.
Yes.
Which later in life can be a gift. And I think for some business owners, trauma at times feeds their success. And it's like, I'm thankful for the results of some of the stuff in my life, but I wouldn't wish it on anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you work with leaders, and the fact that you get to share your story and inspire so many people, but there's people out there like, I don't have that story. Can I do what Eric's done? Can I do what Sten's done? How do you connect with leaders? And there's people listening now that they're like, my parents stayed together and I didn't have traffic.
Yeah.
Like how can you fully teach resiliency and strength? Or is it just life gives you that? How have you dealt with that with the people you coach?
Yeah. Yeah. My wife and I are foster parents. We're going to have a foster son. He's going to join our family here when he gets done with school, a 12-year-old boy. When he gets done with his school year this year, he'll start living with us. As foster parents, in hearing the stories of some of these children, it is heartbreaking. I mean, heartbreaking that the hand of cards so many young people were dealt. They just had the misfortune of the family they were born into. Yeah. That's it, right? That's it. I didn't have that misfortune, Sten. My dad's a policeman. My mom's a school teacher. I grew up on a 100-acre Christmas tree farm here in Connecticut, right? Like, I didn't have that adversity as a young person, right? All of us in life. I mean, I talk about the helicopter crash, Sten. I mean, we've all, as human beings, life is challenging. It's challenging. My sister, my older sister, she was never in a helicopter crash. She's 3 years older than me. She's a three-time All-American women's lacrosse player, two-time first-team All-American lacrosse player, runs sub 3.5-hour marathons. 4 years ago, she gets diagnosed with lung cancer. She's never smoked a cigarette a day in her life.
Wow.
Like, life is challenging. Yeah. And we're all faced with adversity. I think that for us, though, and getting back to your question, though, is that admittedly, some of us have had more adversity in our lives than others. And by the way, when you're faced with adversity, it does matter for your overall success in life. And that's why, getting back to being foster parents, the younger you're experiencing that level of adversity, it can have much greater impact throughout your life. Okay. So that does matter, but I digress. The question, and for all of us, is this: toughness, resiliency. It's a learned trait. It's a learned trait. We're not born resilient. We have to learn it. We have to develop it. Thankfully, we can. We can. How do we do so? I talked a little bit about it earlier with hard and challenging. First and foremost, embrace the challenges in your life. Embrace them.
Yeah.
Realize that every challenge with which we're faced is an opportunity to grow. There is no true thing in life as just maintaining. Grow or die. That's not what Eric Kapitulik thinks. That's what biology teaches us. Grow or die. What are you doing? It's a choice. You can signal to yourself, the most important person in the world, yourself. You can signal to yourself and to others that you choose to grow by getting outside your comfort zone, facing adversity, whatever it might be in your life, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, right? I mean, the adversity, and maybe because of, you know, the genetics here of the square jawline and stuff, in being a Marine, people think, oh, physical. Well, yeah, that's one way to get outside your comfort zone. But how about mental, emotional? We all have certain beliefs about politics or religion. When's the last time you read an article from somebody who disagrees or has the opposite viewpoint of yourself, right? You talk about your audience. To grow your business, to pick up a call and call, cold call somebody,
yeah.
Truly is born. Who's born loving cold calling? Is anybody born to love cold calling? Does anybody is born to love getting the phone hung up on them? No. So every time you do it and you get that little pit in your stomach, great. It's an opportunity to grow. Look for most of us, I talk about the helicopter crash. That was years ago. Most of us, me included, we have to look for and put ourselves in uncomfortable situations, physical, mental, emotional.
Mm. I love that.
Do so.
Yeah, the term I had to learn was pursue discomfort. Because I had so much of it kind of thrust upon me when I was young that my mindset became comfort at all costs. Work hard, but the ultimate goal, and I've heard people call it like the lazy man's utopia. It's like, I'm going to work hard until I stop. Until fortunately, I was able to realize, like, no, there's no finish line here. Like, this is like you learn to sit in tension, you pursue discomfort. And that was, you know, for the 12-year-old in me to say, no, but that's not what we've been going after. You almost have to kind of rewrite the story. And you say mental health. I think the people that become most aware of themselves, there's stuff in me and my story, and I'm sure in yours, that like will never go away. But you also don't want them to be in charge anymore. And I work with a lot of advisors that they're, you know, the goal is just enough. It's average is acceptable. And I've found if I can get outside influence, you know, you going and influencing those lacrosse teams and shaking up their status quo, it's hard to do a lot of the stuff we're talking about on your own.
It very much is. It's very challenging to do it on your own. No doubt, because to do it on your own, that requires self-discipline, right? Now, thankfully, discipline, like what we're just talking about with resiliency, any of those things that we're talking about, none of us are born that way.
Yeah,
those things are learned traits, learned traits, and we just have to go and do it. So with discipline, as an example, and being disciplined, right? And you're on your own. You got to get up in the morning, and you got to get into your one room office with your laptop, and you got to pick up the phone and call people. Okay, a bit of that is, yeah, you just have to go and do it. There's no secret sauce here. Just go and do it, number one. By the same token, though, and I do thank the Marine Corps a lot for this, and then because the Marine Corps made me aware that just how fortunate I am, That's what one of the things the Marine Corps did. It made me really realize, like, America, our country, we have so many challenges as a nation that we can get better at. But oh my God, what the Marine Corps showed me was, thank God I was born in this country.
Wow.
Thank God, right? And one of the things, it gave me a level of appreciation that, look, when I'm first starting the program, like for your audience who's trying to build their business, right? Mm-hmm. And as I just got done saying, I use those words very specifically of, oh, I got to get up. I got to get into the office. I got to make these calls, right? Well, if that's your mindset, it is going to be very difficult to stay disciplined. It will be. You are making it more difficult for yourself. Instead, can you train yourself to wake up in the morning and say, I get to wake up this morning.
Wow.
I get to go into the office. I get to pick up that phone and call. I get to do it. How fortunate am I that I get to do this? And how do we develop that mindset? You get working, hard work, hard work, because there's lots of mornings you're going to get up and you're going to go, oh God, to get hung up on another 100 times, right? Like, change your mindset. Just talk. And by the way, and I said it earlier, our thoughts become our words and our words manifest themselves in our actions. Stan, the great thing about it is it works in the opposite direction though. Like, so there, I mean, this is an Eric Capitulik who says this. I mean, lots of studies have shown if you're unhappy, put a smile on your face, you will become happier.
Yeah.
It works in the opposite direction too. So remember, for your audience, just remember that.
It's great. Yeah, I'm not going to turn this into a cold plunge or a sauna podcast. I'll leave that to Joe Rogan. But I starting your day with something challenging, I've found sets the tone. And you know, that could be journaling, quiet time, like something intentional in the morning, versus, hey, I rolled out of bed, I'm going to start just doing the things I have to do. So I know practically for me, how I start my day, it does set the tone for the day. So I know practically, are there things in your world you've learned, you know, even though you've obviously have discipline, obviously have resilience, but you're still human. What are some things you do that help you with that?
Yeah. So you talked to me on a day that I did do this, right? So I do think that if we can create a habit where we get up in the morning and exercise, do something, there's lots of studies that have shown not only the physical benefits of it, but we were talking about mental and emotional health earlier, Sten, right? There's a report just came out at Harvard. You know, vigorously running for something like 15 minutes, the good feelings you get from it and the counteracting impact that has on depression, 26%. 15 minutes of vigorous running a day lowers the chance of depression by 26%. What the report also showed was 15 minutes of walking, it has the same impact.
Nice.
So just getting up and moving. So when I say exercise, I don't mean working out, maybe people think about, but if you just get up out of bed and you just go for a walk, right? The impacts, because again, it's not physical or mental or emotional. It's physical, mental, and emotional. Those three things have a symbiotic relationship here. So that's an easier thing to do. And so many people struggle with thinking about, oh, I'm going to get up, I'm going to go to the gym, can I do it every day? And I understand that, right? And it is challenging, especially if you've never done it. So instead, though, can you get up in the morning and just walk for 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Right. And then that becomes a gateway standard for a lot of people where now they walk for 15 minutes and now they go, oh, you know, hey, on my walk, I'm going to do a couple of pushups when I'm out here. Right. And that's how we build discipline. And yes, it's impacting our physical well-being. It impacts all three things all together though. So that is one that we can do tomorrow morning when we wake up.
Yeah, I want to move into goals versus standards, because I heard you use the word standard there, where some other people might say goal.
Yeah.
For our audience, something we teach a lot is you will not reach your potential without a team. There are mm-hmm. advisors out there that are on their own, but they're doing a lot of things they shouldn't do. They maybe don't have the lifestyle balance they want. And so we coach to say, if you are a solo practitioner or have one assistant, the goal is not to stay there forever. But the goal is also not to have a team of 100. But we believe there's some structure within the financial services business that allows you to impact more people, work more efficiently, and make more income. So putting that lens on, saying that everyone we're talking to, we are saying, if you are not on a team, you need to find a way to be on a team, whether you build it or join it. How does the goal versus standards conversation play into that context?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I said this earlier, right? I don't use the pronoun I very often because it is misleading. Because when you say I founded the program, well, I may have been the only person at the program, but to think that I didn't get help along the way would be very egotistical of me. Very. I mean, to start the program, I got huge, in my case, huge logistical support from Rob Hale. Rob Hale is on the Forbes billionaire list. He's one of the owners in the Celtics, right? Very fortunate there that I had that relationship with Rob. Even taking that away, though, just the counsel and the advice I got from people along the way, even if it was stuff that I didn't do or didn't agree with, right? Just that term self-made man, self-made person, I think is very misleading, right? Number one. Number two, when we discuss goals and standards, and this is, why is this important even for the sole proprietors out there, right? Is this, we confuse those terms. As a society, we confuse those terms. Goals are performance-based. Goals are what we want to achieve in life, whether it be individually or as a team. Goals are performance-based. They reinforce what we want to achieve. Sten, the truth is that most people, even if they don't clearly like write them down and define them, they have them, or at least they think about them. Literally, everybody has goals. Everybody does. World-class teams have goals and standards. World-class individuals have goals and standards. Standards are behavior-based. Goals are performance-based. Standards are behavior-based. Standards reinforce how we are expected to behave while achieving our goals. World-class individuals and world-class organizations have both. Why are they so important? Because we can achieve goals in the short term. Good economy, lucky break, most talented player, right? We can achieve our goals in the short term without standards. But our ability to replicate success, it requires mission critical. It requires both. We will always behave this way. Good, bad, great environment, poor environment, COVID, no COVID, up market, down market. This is how we are going to behave. This is how I am going to behave. So because of that, you can trust yourself first and foremost. Regardless of the situation, I know what my behavior will be. You can trust yourself. Second, your teammates can trust you, whether those teammates are the other one other person that might work with you, whether those teammates are your spouse, your parents, whether those teammates are your clients, they can trust you. And without trust, we have no relationship. By the flip side, with trust, we have the strongest relationships in the world.
Yep.
And our ultimate success is a reflection of our relationships. That is why it's so important to have goals and standards, number one. Number two, a key point of this is, think of this as a leader, whether that leader is you're a parent, you're a coach, you're a business leader of a team of people, or just yourself. Why is it so important to have goals and standards? Do not confuse the terms I'm proud of and happy for. Proud of and happy for. My son, we're going to head down to DC this week, and he's playing in a 7-on-7 football tournament. He's a good football player, Sten, okay? He's going to score some touchdowns this weekend in a 7-on-7 game, and he's going to make some spectacular catches. I know he will. Mm-hmm. After the game, he's going to, Dad, you see that one-handed grab I made? Dad, you see that sick move I made? Everything else. Axel, I am so happy for you. I'm so happy for you. He achieved some goals that he wanted to achieve. At the program, we have certain financial goals, as an example, that we want to achieve. When we do so, I make sure that I highlight to my teammates how happy I am for us and for them. As I'll reiterate to my son, as I'll reiterate to my teammates at the program, as I reiterate to myself, Sten, goal achievement does not make me proud. Behaviors, meeting and exceeding our behavior standards, that makes me proud. Axel, I am so happy for you in your performance this weekend. Axel, I am so proud of how hard you've been working. I've been so proud of your toughness and resiliency that you've shown, studying and then still making the time to get your work in on the football field. Those behaviors, I'm so proud of you. My team at the program, I'm so happy that we achieved these goals, that you were able to make these financial goals in your life. Let me tell you why I'm so proud of you. Man, you were selfless.
Yeah.
You were disciplined in this. You can do it for your teammates, for the sole proprietors out there. You must do it for yourself. Must do it for yourself. You may be disappointed you don't reach your financial goals, but can you still be proud of your behaviors, as an example? Mm. Have both.
No, that's powerful. Yeah, I think that, yeah, there's goals out of our control. There's variables we can't see coming. Yeah, there's something about sleeping well at night when you know I did everything I could do for myself. It's kind of what I've used, the future self conversation. It's like, you know, that, is that person going to sit down and be like, man, I'm,
yes,
you know, I love that language. I'm proud of,
yes,
the way you lived your life and the things you've done, which is you worked hard, you encouraged others, you were always learning. Maybe you weren't the best advisor making the most money and didn't have the most technical expertise, but yeah, that's landing with me, is that the standard is different than the goal.
Yes.
The standard we can control. And that's a battle of the mind, really. Am I going to wake up on time? Am I going to get the workout in? Am I going to be honorable, tell the truth? Yeah, that's strong.
Yeah, that's right, Sten. And standards are based, standards are based on our core values. And it's why it's so important for us as individuals to really spend some time, and as business leaders, really spend some time in thinking about what are our core values as an individual and as a team, and then our standards, our behaviors, they should reinforce those value system, that value system. And core values are the foundation of our culture as individuals and as a team. So really spend some time figuring out what your core values are, because from our core values, standards flow from our core values.
That's right. That's helpful. So from standards, as practically for our listeners, is a standard for a team, we're always here 15 minutes before a meeting starts. On time is on time late. We always ask for feedback, like what practically could it look like for a team that you said, well, here are three standards that could make sense.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great question, Sten. Here's our answer, right? Is I can tell you what ours are and what makes sense for us as an organization at the program, but we don't tell other organizations what theirs should be, right? Just because at the program, Sten, we have our call anybody, talk to anybody at the program, Sten. The program, we're three things. We're selfless, tough, and disciplined. That's who we are. Selfless, tough, and disciplined. Those are our values. That's how we do things around here. It's our culture, how we do things around here. that's right for us. It doesn't mean that it would be right for you in your organization. Doesn't mean that it would be right for any one of your audience members. But spend the time to figure out what your values are. And as an example, we say that, as an example, we're tough. Okay. We define tough as mission focused, an ability to stay mission focused in the face of physical, mental, and emotional adversity. That's a core value of ours. Okay. Then we have standards that reinforce that. What is something that we do every single day that shows that we are being tough or resilient? What's something every single day that we're doing to help us be able to stay mission focused in the face of physical, mental adversity? Our standard is consistent self and team improvement. Consistent self and team improvement. You have to prove to yourself and to your teammates that every single day or every week, you're consistently improving physically, mentally, emotionally, okay? But that may not be right for at Google. It may not be right for you. It may not be right, but it's right for us.
Yep.
So now with that said, as parents, there are certainly some standards as for our family and with my son and my daughter and our foster son who's going to be coming to work, that we just have certain standards that are right for our family. Mm. Look, you may choose that they're not right for yours. Fine, but they're right for ours and we're having them.
That's great. Yeah. So practically I'm hearing core values are important. I think most companies agree to that. To the degree they implement it, internalize it, I think I see that all over the map.
Yes.
The follow-up is what standards are reinforcing that? I think it's mm-hmm. important everybody in your company probably is able to tell you what the core values are. But yes. I think just having them say them over and over again is maybe not the best option. If they understand the standards that are action of reinforcing those, I feel like that might internalize those much better.
To say that you're in our, I'll use us as the example, right? To say that we're disciplined, it doesn't make us disciplined. We get a shirt, we get a picture board some sort of poster made up with our, that says discipline on it and put it up in our lobby. Doesn't make us disciplined. Get a t-shirt, doesn't make us disciplined, right? No, what does is our standard that reinforces discipline, Sten. We respond to all communication within 24 hours. That's our standard.
Nice.
So if anybody at your organization, Sten, calls, emails us, whatever, check them. Ask your teammates then. Have they ever reached out to the program when we haven't responded within 24 hours? If we haven't, I want to know about it. And by the way, if I haven't, I want to know about it, right? Like, these aren't for my team. They're for all of us, right? We're going to respond to all communication within 24 hours because that's how we do things around here.
Yeah.
That's what shows that we're being disciplined.
Love that. That's great.
To your point. Yeah. To your earlier point. Yeah.
All right. We're going to have to do another podcast together because I love this. Let's finish on, because this one really had to change in me as a leader, nice versus kind. And I think there's some people that maybe don't care about this at all. You know, they're just results at all costs and you're either on the team or you're not. But I do find, and I'm in the South. And so it's, maybe there's like the nice leader is the person you want to be. And I felt like that's who I wanted to be until it actually was doing harm. And I read a book called Not Nice. And it was this idea of like kind leaders are not always trying to make everybody happy.
Yeah. Yes. I got to check that book out and make sure I'm not plagiarizing from them. But I who I'm plagiarizing from, I know who I'm plagiarizing from, though, is Fred Kaufman, former executive at leadership development executive at Google, good friend of ours. Sten, you and your audience got to check out his book, Conscious Business. Just an unbelievable human being. I always tell Fred, Sten, do you remember like old school, the Dos Equis ad with the most interesting man in the world?
Great.
Yes. Yeah, that's what Fred is to me. He's the most interesting guy in the world, right? Anyway, Fred has a line that has always stuck with me. Nice. Hey, how are you? Get the door for somebody, right? Help the little old lady across the street, right? Help somebody with their bags, right? My kids went to this school. They got a buddy bench, right? They call it the kindness bench. Hey, if somebody's sitting on it, go up and talk to them, see what's going on, right? I think it's a wonderful idea. I just don't call it kind. That's being nice to each other. As Fred highlights, nice is a form of laziness. Nice is a form of laziness. It like changed my world.
Yeah, that's
when he said it.
I'm sure a lot of people would maybe argue that at first. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what? I'm not going to say hi to you. If I see you struggling, I'm not going to say something to you. Like, that's not being kind. That's being a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Or the type of human being I'm trying to raise and trying to be myself, right? I mean, mm-hmm. So what is kind? Kind is making each other better. That's what a kind person does. Nice leaders, hey guys, man, you're doing a great job. Nice leaders, they don't address the person who's not pulling their weight mm-hmm. and instead gives their work to somebody else. Because, well, I'm a nice guy, person, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Kind people make individuals, make their teammates better, make their team and teammates better. How do we do so? First, having incredible self-discipline and having personal accountability, and then having team accountability. Meet the standard. And then hold each other accountable to doing the same. We all need help, Sten. You mentioned earlier, right? Talk about being disciplined. I think I am. I mean, my teammates at the program tell me, Cap, you're the most disciplined person I know. My friends tell me that, right? And Sten, I think I am one of. I don't know if I'm the most, but I think I am one of. Do you know the average person makes 30,000 decisions a day? 30,000. So if I'm disciplined 99.9% of the time over a 365 day year where I'm faced with 30,000 decisions, can I tell you that 100% of the time I make disciplined decisions? No, I'd be lying to you. That's true for all of us. No. Yeah. So there are times when I'm undisciplined, and when I am, to have a teammate say, hey, Cap, hey, I sent this to you 2 days ago. You haven't responded yet to me.
Mm.
That's being undisciplined. Thank you. Thank you is my response, because it is incredibly uncomfortable to hold a teammate accountable for any of us. And whether that be your spouse, your children, your athletic teammates, your coworkers, it is incredibly uncomfortable to hold a teammate accountable. So if you have a teammate who does hold you accountable, what they're signaling to you is, you being the best version of yourself is more important to me than my discomfort. That's why, Sten, we work with, as I said earlier, 160 college and pro athletic teams and corporations throughout North America. Every one of those teams at the end of the day has some form of, hey, guys, bring it in. This is what we did well today. This is what we got to do better. Hey, on three, family. 1, 2, 3, family. Sten, there are a lot of dysfunctional families in the world.
Yeah.
Like, show me a team that holds each other accountable. I'll show you a team that truly cares about each other, because those are individuals that are signaling to each other that their teammate being the best version of themselves is more important than their own personal discomfort. Nice versus kind. Be both.
Mm. Man, that's great. That's a great way to end. We'll connect. We'll do this again. Our listeners, go get the program. Great book. From a coaching standpoint, if they reach out, how can they find out about more coaching if they wanted to bring you in, engage beyond the book? What does that look like?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. You can always go to theprogram.org. It's our website. Talks all about our experiential services, our consulting services, a keynote speaker. For organizations throughout North America. Thanks. Thank you.
Appreciate you, brother.